Oh, very smart. Very good. Very good. I like feeling cared for. How are you? Yeah, you good? I'm good. I'm a bit sad. I didn't know until a few minutes ago that I was Gail's last guest, although I should have put two and two together because we talk all the time. But I didn't. So I'm very honored. And I was thinking about my relationship with Gail, and I met Gail when I was here in the 90s, having a really, 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 really shitty time at Concordia. I hated it so much. I finished my degree in 18 months and was gone. Gail was a highlight. Meeting Gail was a highlight. And at the same, around the same time, I met the woman who's now my partner. But as I told my students the other day, even though I had the shittiest time during my degree, I actually met probably about 8 or 10 people who are still really important in my life. And even though the first result was that I swore I would never write poetry again once I got out of my degree alive, it actually made me really hungry to change things, which is what I've been doing, trying to do. I don't think I've caught up to Gail yet, though. And that's what makes having her around so much fun. She was talking about the event with Renee Gladman a couple weeks ago, and it was so inspiring. My students were just like, they'd forgotten to sort of think about recording it. And I could just see, as soon as she opened her mouth, they were scrambling from their recording devices. And it was great just because I knew she was nervous, as we all are. And then to understand that the authenticity of the practice always is what carries us through the most difficult times. It's all about the authentic engagement with the work. So thank you, Gail, for always keeping me on my toes and showing me the way. I have to say, too, that we discussed this book a little bit, but in general, I've never worked more alone than I did on this book, because anybody I told what I was doing, they went, "What? What? Why on earth would you be interested in class?" And I still feel very alone with this book, and I was saying to Gail earlier, I feel a bit like a time traveler whenever I have to read from it. And I carry around these versions of the book. They're all very important to the process of thinking about the book. And I'm going to start with a couple of poems from the early part of my book. And we'll just go from there. These early poems were kind of fun to write initially because the goal was just to sort of almost line by line rethink them. And I was a new kind of parent, and it was kind of fun to have that constraint and to be in conversation. Of course, then I began to realize who I was in conversation. But these first poems are kind of, I think, fun. Do you all remember the first poem of Ariel? I imagine everybody's read it, but maybe not. No? Yes? No. How many Plath fans? I should ask. How much do I have to do here? How many? Yeah? Not many? Few? I'm always afraid everybody knows all the poems much better than I do. Of course they do. So this is the first poem, and it's the first one mine as well. Hers starts, "Love set you going like a fat gold watch. The midwife slapped your footstools and your bald cry took its place among the elements. Our voices echo, magnifying your arrival. New statue in a drafty museum. Your nakedness shadows our safety." Morning song. A love procedure set me going like a big fat lie. An IT specialist slapped a motherboard and my first bald tweet slid into the feed. All night, Instagrams and updates flicker in pixelated dreams. I wake to a beep, stumble out in my men's nightshirt and stare, blank as a gull, into the liquid crystal display. Am I any more authentic than the account that tweets your verse? Or the cloud that archives your words? Or the screen on which your poems float? Dickinson says, to fill a gap, insert the thing that caused it. What thing? This sleek app that brightens and swallows my thoughts? These two moons that fill my palms and eat my hours? Vowels rise and hover like drones. What is missing in me? Refresh, refresh. I can't stop searching for love here. I'm really curious about the single poem, that kind of glistening idea of the glistening jewel. And I always think of these early poems of hers in Ariel as her jewels, because they're sort of like the crystallized perfection of the Colossus, and then we get through Ariel this kind of explosion of rage, and all of that sort of tightness kind of goes. But in the beginning, there are these really tight poems. So the other one I'm going to read a couple more from the beginning. This is Jailer. And not surprisingly, it's not in the version that you know. He's excised it. The version that most of us know is Ariel is not the version that she left behind. And that was sort of the big first crisis I had to face, because they're quite different trajectory. And these select poems, which are quite important, he just cut out. So, I think The Jailer begins. My night sweats grease his breakfast plate. Feelings are a hopeless theory. Daily I fall from grace, the big splash, whatever. I should have been epic. Eaton footnotes. Married architecture, swirled through my 20s in classics and couture. Poetry is the big lie. Oh sure, love crashed into my life, a dark pillar of flight, a walking muscle with a slick of black hair. Soon it was legal. A swoon of potential swelled in the bowl of my hips. I stared into his heart, but like the emperor, I was too vain. I said, what a tower, what a prize. Brute love that line by line we indulged, so crazed we wrote until we tasted the last of it and stunned ourselves with our emptiness. I should have gone to Hollywood. If you're going to be a trophy, you might as well go for gold. Stop at nothing, you who are ambitious. Let me tell you this. There's nothing like an income to cheer. Nothing but humorlessness to fear. The other contentious little jewel is The Rabbit Catcher. This is a poem that gets talked about a lot in we're writing about their relationship. Ted, I think, went to his grave trying to change the narrative. The poem comes up, his version comes up again in the birthday letters. This poem begins, and it's not in his version. This poem begins, it was a place of force, the wind gagging my mouth. He guides you across the floor, thumbing your American neck, right, left, steady as a joystick. What's in this for you, lady? You've already embraced the ledge, tossed the crinoline off the roof, written yourself through paralysis and into your own book. Was it reproduction that bent you to the gilded frame? Like a pool, you leapt into the knot of gold. You entered the ring without armor. You strike a blow, bite, it's all foreplay. Your body preparing to multiply. I want to take you by the ear. You have a spine. Use it. You don't need a tarot pack to see where you are. Your rabbit heart bleats in a field of stones. Don't just lie there and let it leak. Don't let him drink you in, sell your skin, and buy her roses. I forgot to check the time. I think I'm okay. Normally I'm pretty good about the time. I wanted to read a poem that I don't think I've ever read before. But it's a poem called Totem. And it's hard. You see, this is what happens when you get into Plath world. You're like, is it in that version? Is it in this version? When was it written? What was the exact date? I believe it was actually written January 28th, 1963. And then there are these like complete fabrications, like, oh no, that's not in that poem because it's in Winter Trees, and Winter Trees is the late versions of the poems, but that's not actually true because he put the late poems in the early poems, which was the Ariel version, which actually technically she finished in December. So this poem, Totem, is written January 28th, 1963, and let's see, where is her version? Ugh, now it's getting confusing. Well, there's her version. I won't bother. I've read enough of her voice. I think you get her voice. Oh, yeah, here it is. Totem begins. The engine is killing the track. The track is silver. It stretches into the distance. It will be eaten nevertheless. Its running is useless. So, after many versions of this poem, I came across, because one can't not come across, Ted Hughes' The Thought Fox, which begins, I imagine this midnight moment's forest. Something else is alive besides the clock's loneliness. And this blank page where my fingers move. And goes on to talk about the moment in which he gives up studying literature to become a poet. And I thought, how lovely to have such clarity about that moment and to have it be so bucolic. So, this is my version of Totem, which I think combines them both. It's their abject little baby born of these two poems. Totem. A sudden blow, a knock on the forest floor. Your hair, he says, it stinks of fox. It was true. I had let myself go. A snarl of oak raked me up like a comb of leaves, and I floated in the field of my doorway the way I floated through my 15th year. You have to stop, he hissed. You women, your anger is killing us. Who is us? I wanted to ask, but it was too late. My body already snagged under the brash walls of my youth. A snowy beak shattered my mother's drunken song. One wing probed, the other pressed until I bit my lip. You're mine, said the wind. No. But if my body wasn't his, it was also not yet mine. Starless window, clock ticks. My mother, a dead mind, walking. No, I say, no. We're only getting started. In my dreams, I take his neck and snap it. One by one, I smooth the scars, wipe blood from young bodies that, like totems, come alive to their own stories and walk away. A little intense. I'll read one more. This is from this series. Maybe I won't. Yeah, I'll just read one more from this series. No, I won't. I'll go to the next final poem because it's a bit of a long poem. So after a while, I was dealing with all these poems and I was really miserable and very angry, pretty much all the time. And my partner forbade me to talk about Plath anymore. And I said, well, one of the things that was going over my head was like, you know, who was there, 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 where were the women, you know, who was there? And also, what was she reading? Because she was really well read. So I thought, well, in order to go on any further, I have to have some fun. I can't always be in this place. So I thought to myself, what would she have done if she had read someone funny? Like Light, maybe. like Gertrude Stein. And so some of the poems that I enjoy sort of more than others come out of that place. And this is one of them. But it's also, it's a poem that takes on, it's called The Night Dances. It's about the revision of her poem, The Night Dances. And her poem is about her son, Nick, and he's in the crib. And you know, if you have children, they do that thing. They hang on and they do that thing when they go to bed and they're really excited. And so she's sort of staring at this kid, and she's just been left, and everything is opening around her. And there are these women around her, but most of them are not very helpful. Most of them are helpful to Ted. So some of those women come up in here: Olwen, Dido, Elizabeth, Sigmund, and then some of her less favorable biographers, like Janet Malcolm and. Who's the other one? Can't think of her name. Anyway, they all kind of float up in this poem. The Night Dances. Sylvia is a blue checkout. She swears like long grass. Sylvia covets a fine end. She's a very good slice, a very good girl. Thunder is a green fine. Sylvia is a good crop, a fine gateway. Sylvia is a flamethrower. She does. Fine girl, she writes a good girl letter home. Thunder is a long grass. A CEO is a fond day. She had a hard road. Don't be green. It's always a fern day somewhere. Sylvia is a raucous creek. A CEO does not crock a right chest. Her chest is heavily armed. No, not heavenly armed. Not even evenly harmed. She is a swoon-bound woman, a crook of blue moon, a sucker of indolence. Asiya is very impressed to come to dinner with the Hugheses. Dido is a hard nut. She is a right bitch. Knight is fine. Who is next? Sylvia is very astute with trees. She's compressed with trees. Her shoulder fires a Ted Hughes. Who is Hughes? Hughes is a large trout. He is a red belly. You are a wing. Carol is a sweet. Darkness is a muse. Weeds gather in a tiny cage of laps. I have half a mind to shirk. Merwin serves a lone jewel. And who are the Beckers? Who is Elizabeth Sigmund? Gabble, gabble, gabble. She tells a good tale. Oh, don't lapse a good girl. Am I all girl talk? I too appear to go along with Janet Malcolm. She sells you out for Anne. She has a crush on Anne. Anne is a well-meaning deal. She is a tweed bore. She did do a deal with the devil. Did she do a deal with the devil? Does she do a thorough? Knock, knock. Who's there? Olwen. Olwen who? I own one in. I own one in. Out of the white wall with fashionable hips, Olwen. Olwen. Only Olwen is a whitewash of windows to clean. Call Malcolm to look on proxy. Is there the virility in the glass? Warm and virgin, bleeding and peeling. To each her own bitter frame. To each his own Emma Tennant. No, that is not Merwin. Merwin did not have his ears under any petals. Dido, 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 why are you such a bitch? Bitches come from all over England to swarm a good cock. No, she said a good cook. She is a bright tulip, tits up. She has the rule book. She's a fine swarm. She's the queen bee. She must register a compliance. She must register her refrain. The sea has six sides, not an eye. Olwen is a fine eye. Kabul, Kabul, Kabul. That is a red herring. Sunday is a long cream. Sylvia ate her own genius. Later, Merwin left. Later, Dido was a dark night. She needed more cream, more sugar. She was the wrong kind of bore. She was a hate lover, a hate eater, was a tight fist on a green stem, was a skirt of looking, a fine look. There is no subtlety in this plath tale, either or, livers or haters, with or against. My career blooms. It floats away. Come, sit, we can discuss women's lips. Ted loved Sylvia's African lips. It is all very well, Lulu. Isn't it all very well, boo-hoo? Do I be you? Do I be you in the green sun? Do I under the red leaves? Do I under the sticks, the angular sticks? If Plath is a gateway to Olwen, is Olwen a crop door? We sit on feathers with the eyes laid out. Good girl, you being you. Didn't do very, be cozy. Didn't do the socket door, be cozy. Stuck door, glass house, be cozy. The windows are well hung, be cozy. Hello, mother, be cozy. I was accordingly all the right song, be cozy. Each woman according to her own sunflower, be cozy. Do the sweat loans and it is all, don't worry, be cozy. My men are the swallows as follows, be cozy. You will do better than Wolf. It's a foregone conclusion. I'm thinking in this verse, already I'm a grandmother. Hello, Margaret, you are a touching imaging. Thinking of mothers grand and large, all the women who have fallen from great wingless heights, all the women who have lost their sons to idle cops, all the women who have eaten their daughters. I must be a foregone concussion. Not all mothers are a warm stein. Take a spar line. The similes are everywhere, in math, in the night. Like medieval blankets, they press metaphors into my skin. Similes breathe into my ear, and I want lungs where the calla lily is. Don't let the petals slice their fresh flesh, bears a great peach so hot it will melt your tongue. No, Plath never read Stein, but what if she had? Don't wear your thinking. Don't be easy. It is a sad fact. Plath never read Stein. She had a sense of limber. She had a sharp turn, a potential in urn, an intern with time to fritter. The night dances, Snapchat. The past needs a good cut. It is an idea with pause. A sweet tongue goes along in a grape. It is a low cloud that I send with lunch. Bye, lamb, bye. You may cut now. Our thumbs are in. We bob at our sides as the sun falls. Meet me in a gentle time. Let bye-bygones be bye-bygones, bees gone, be gone. Thank you so much for your attention.